So, just to start, I should say this is very much a work in progress, and there's going to be certainly less concrete, hard results than one would perhaps like, but it's a workshop, so perhaps a work in progress is something more acceptable. So the term is romantism, and thermodynamics and the interpretation of quantum theory. And someone did say when they looked at the title, that covers a lot, doesn't it? So. So there's been a lot of interest in recent years, and a lot of very active and really good work on the question, perhaps we should interpret the wave function in quantum theory as an epistemic object. And I'm not going to talk about that, not because I have anything against that program as such, but because I'm going to talk about completely the opposite question. Could we understand the density matrix as being real? And there's a number of question marks there, because you might go, why on earth would you want to do that? And that's a very good question. Some of the motivations that would be behind this is because this might give you a basis for an objective microscopic entry, and it opens some possibilities for non-unitary evolutions that wouldn't make sense otherwise. I should also say, I'm not going to be advocating those motivations. My interest in this topic is just to see what follows from actually asking this question. What would it take? What do you have to actually buy into to actually get anything out of taking the density matrix to be real? And particularly what I'm going to be talking about here is that standard solutions to the measurement problem in quantum theory are affected by this kind of move and what that actually is. Particularly, for example, the kind of non-unitarity required for the resolution of the measurement problem in terms of collapse theories, it's a different kind of non-unitarity. There's a tension between the two, and it's not clear, for example, whether that would actually be whether they could actually be unified. So, motivation to attribute an entropy to individual systems, not an ensemble or an assembly, it's not epistemic or subjective. Somehow, the idea is that Gibbs von Neumann entropy of a system will be some physical property. Just as objective a property as its mass, you might actually describe the density matrix would actually be an individual system. Fundamentally, you'd actually say there's something physically real about that density matrix, and that you measure the von Neumann entropy. So for comparison, density matrices we're sort of familiar with as being sort of epistemic density matrices, a so-called proper mixture, where there's a probability of some particular pure state, and probability here is usually taken as meaning some measure of one's ignorance or degree of belief as to which actual pure state the world is really in, or indeed if you're cyberstemic, not even that, but which, say, preparation process was used. Then there's the reduced density matrix, the improper mixture that comes about from, again, you've got this fundamental description is this pure state, and then you're just only looking at a partial aspect of it, and you find you get a non-zero Gibbs von Neumann entropy because you're only looking at part of it. And again, as an explanation of thermodynamic entropy, you have this feature that it's, in the sense the world itself, as a general, doesn't have a non-zero entropy. The reason why you see a non-zero entropy, even in this case, is because you only see part of the world, you only have access to part of the world. And it's something to do with your perspective rather than actually, out there in the world. So the proposal that's been put forward in some literature is, let's interpret the density matrix as being, as I referred to, as ontic, a row-ontic interpretation. It's not actually a mixture, so I use this slightly different notation for it. And here, it looks the same as this, but here the W's are not to be interpreted as probabilities in any form. They're actually physical parameters that characterize the natural physical property of the system. Well, the immediate problem is, so say you make that move, what do you get? Nothing. Because as long as the evolution of the system is still unitary, then your entropy increase is zero. So even if you say you've got an objective entropy there, it's not changing. And the kind of phenomenon you want to be explaining with this is thermodynamics, which involves irreversible processes and entropy increase. And all that entropy increase, the only way you can actually get that entropy increase would be through inaccessible microscopic correlations, and that will turn out to be more or less the same kind of a counter entropy increase as you would have for not moving to this robotic approach. And again, the entropy increase would just be because you can't access these microscopic correlations, and it would just be a thing of your perspective. So if you were just to stick with unitary evolution, you kind of lose the whole point of making this move. Another issue actually you might want to is that the object density metrics with unitary evolution is clearly indistinguishable. All of the measured properties are going to be absolutely identical, so you couldn't tell any difference at all. So really, to get anything out of this, you have to make a move to non-unitary dynamics. And the kind of leading approach for this kind of non-unitary quantum thermodynamics still wants to actually fix some constraints. So one of the constraints is it's going to be energy conserving. We want to maintain the normalization of the density matrix. And want to actually have the possibility of a strict entropy increase. And then also, as a sort of a limit case, to try and maintain the possibility of actually being compatible at least with the existing empirical results that we've got. That for pure states, that entropy increase should be zero. So pure states stay pure. That means if we purify a thing, then the kind of really high-precision quantum experiments we've done so far, we've got some chance that we're not immediately being invalidated, empirically invalidated.
Oh.
Yes?
But you're talking about non-unitary dynamics. How would you expect pure states to be pure?
Pure states to remain pure? The reason for actually asking for this, it's actually more... The reason is, it's not something one expects. It's something that one... It's being imposed for the reason that way you're not immediately going to be in conflict with known experimental results.
Are you saying that, I'm just not understanding that, are you having unitary dynamics or not?
It's going to be non-unitary dynamics.
Then why would you expect pure states to remain pure?
The non-unitary dynamics we're going to get is going to be non-unitary, but pure states will remain pure.
Okay.
So you're talking
about it's being
non-unitary dynamics.
Yeah, these are some constraints that we're going to impose upon the non-unitary dynamics.
Okay. Is this entropy
the
Neumann entropy or
the
change?
The entropy here is the Gibbs von Neumann entropy. Yeah.
Just on that, it kind of seems that if your pure states didn't remain pure, then a realistic interpretation of pure states would automatically force you into a realistic interpretation of mixed states anyway. So that perhaps that's another interpretation, another way of looking at it.
If your pure states didn't remain pure,
so if pure states evolve to mixed states,
yeah,
and you said the pure states are real,
yeah,
and they really evolve to mixed states, then the mixed states must also be real.
No, I just need to know
which one. Depends on how the evolution goes. Now the actual particular program, so there's a concrete program attempting to solve this that's Gianpaolo Barretta sort of developed over the years. Starts by taking this, which has a nice kind of geometric view that can be introduced to. So it starts by taking the density matrix and puts it into this kind of square root density matrix formalism. Now this is just actually a mathematical tool that gives a nice geometric picture. The unitary evolution looks like this, in this formalism, where delta H is actually the Hamiltonian minus the average Hamiltonian. And this fulfills nicely these constraints, as we expect, time-independent Hamiltonian evolution to do so. And the proposal that Barretta investigated is, well, let's add an extra bit, a dissipative term of the kind that you actually expect in dissipative systems. And to find out the right thing as possibilities for x, sort of, first of all, we've got gamma t is this is a parameterized path in the square root density matrix space. Then the rate of change of that is tangent of x to the path. In the operator space, it sort of defines a inner product structure that has all the nice things for doing an inner product of the operator space. And fills all the required characteristics. And then you find that the rate of change, and that is will hold true for a generic evolution of the density matrix. Not just Hamiltonian, any evolution of the density matrix. The rate of change of any observable along the path, in fact, is equal to this dot product between 2 gamma A and gamma dot T, which means that you can interpret this geometrically in a sense as pointing as a vector in the operator space pointing in the direction of maximum increase of this of the expectation value of that operator. If it's perpendicular to gamma dot T, then along this path, this operator is not changing. If it's parallel, then it's maximum change. The next thing is taking an operator that gives you the Gibbs von Neumann entropy when averaged, and that's quite easy to define. So you take the 2 gamma T and you simply decompose it into two components, one of which is the component that is perpendicular to gamma and H, and one of which, the rest of it, which lies in the space, subspace that's spanned by the gamma and the H operators. Well, this guarantees that by being this section, by being perpendicular to both of these, guarantees that this product will be zero, which means the rate of change of H and gamma will be zero along the path, along that direction. So it gives the maximum change in S with no change in the normalization or the energy, which leads immediately to Barretta's proposal. Simply add that. And this is, by definition then, this is the addition that gives you the maximum increase in entropy without actually violating conservation of energy, and then guarantees that the density matrix remains normalized. Bonus, for pure states, that's zero. So for pure states, it actually reduces back to the standard unitary evolution. So although this was something that they actually desired, and in Barretta's original formulation of it, it was a constraint imposed, it actually drops out of this particular construction. Well, actually, if you look at it in terms of the actual density matrices, this is the actual formalism, and this parameter tau here, a new physical constant value to be determined by experiment. I say ish, because technically it wouldn't violate the formalism if it was in fact a functional of the density matrix itself as well. So it could actually have a dependence on the density matrix, and still I think it would get work out. That's the kind of determinant. So it's that times that, that times that, that times that. Big, long, ugly expression. But that's what it actually looks like. I think this looks really so much neater. But just, you know, if you want to see what it looks like actually in the density matrix version, that's what it looks like. And what's the consequences of this new expression? Well, suppose we actually look at what happens for our epistemic density matrix. Pure states evolve to pure states, so really we don't actually get any change. The ontic density matrix, if you look at this, it goes, and you can see it fairly straightforwardly, it'll increase entropy consistent with conservation of energy, which we know actually reaches a maximum value at a canonical distribution. So an ontic density matrix will evolve towards a canonical thermal state. Provided, of course, it's not initially just a pure state. If it's a pure state, it will stay on pure state. Here's the straightforward thing, is this is actually non-linear, because clearly if the evolution were linear, then this equation would have to hold. So this equation is non-linear in the row space, and it's not a non-linearity in the row space that's equivalent to a non-linear evolution of the wave function, because non-linear evolution of the wave function would still be, when you look at an epistemic mixture of those, would actually still be linear in the density matrix space, because it's just probabilities. And so this is actually quite distinct. Now, that kind of evolution is not something you can actually really account for from the point of view of a probability distribution and pure states. And if you had some sort of mix of ontic density matrices, you get a different kind of, you end up with a different limit state again. What this means is that even if these three types of density matrix at one particular time are prepared to be the same and give the same statistics at one time, then as they evolve in time, they evolve to different things. So What you get is a possibility of actually by doing two-time correlations, you can discover the characteristic distinct evolutions that leave open the possibility of an empirically testable signature for this. Obviously, there's going to be difficulties with that. You have to get the same kind of difficulties that you encounter when you're looking at empirical evidence for objective collapse models. You have to eliminate decoherence, you have issues of time scales, you have this parameter that isn't actually constrained and you can set it how you like, but again, as in the objective collapse program, we can look at existing data and we can say, you know, do we already have evidence for it? Can we actually put it below, it has to be below a certain thing? And then we can constrain it in the other direction saying, well, if you make this too large or too small, then maybe it's just not going to do the original job. I mean, you know, you could always get agreement with experiment on making this incredibly, incredibly extreme. And you know, make this a very, very large number. This term goes very, very close to zero. But in the end of the day, that means over the lifetime of the universe, it's not going to produce very much entropy and it's not doing the job you wanted. But to actually provide an account of thermodynamic irreversibility and say this is the reason why we see thermodynamic irreversibility, you've got some constraints upon how low that number can be. And I want to emphasize, there is an empirically testable signature for this. So you may totally dislike the idea of a row optic density matrix. You may think it's badly motivated. You may think it's a really poor idea. But in the end of the day, it's going to make empirical suggestions, predictions. And you have to actually take that seriously.
Well, it depends on what you prepare those. It depends on how you can prepare those and whether you can actually do that, right?
Yeah, I mean, sure, what you have to do is actually get into situations where you look at what this theory says, it's going to be something where, a situation where you pull out a density matrix and it's going to be an ontic density matrix. If you take the theory seriously, you sort of compress it slightly and then you watch the experiment back and you'll find and according to this theory, you're going to get evolutions of one kind, and if it's just an epistemic density matrix, you're going to get evolutions of another kind. Well, the primary thing you can actually say is actually a thermalized state. Because again, if you're going to take this seriously, you have to believe that thermalized states are actually ontic density matrices. So if you take a state and it's being very well thermalized and you pull it out, you believe that's an ontic density matrix and not an epistemic mixture.
But then it doesn't evolve. It's already.
Right, but then you actually have to do some work to put it out of equilibrium. Mm-hmm. And then you let it evolve back to equilibrium and you see how it evolves. That's the kind of procedure. But the actual devil is in the details of trying to make sure you haven't got other kind of influences. But what's interesting is because of this non-linearity at the level of the density matrix equation, this equation is not of a Lindblad type. So kind of the KGSL equations do not fit into this formula. So this is another reason why it actually opens the possibility of actually a genuine empirical test between this and the kind of CP-MAP equations that we used to. So, that's the kind of the actual the model for a robotic density matrix that has these interesting properties. But the measurement problem, in a very oversimplified nutshell, please don't jump up and down and say I got it wrong. This is just looking at it in a particularly simplified way from the point of view and saying, well, okay, how does robotism fit in with the understanding of quantum theory? And oversimplified nutshell, linear evolution gives you this entangled superposition, which because of the interference effects, you can't simply understand as being a statistical mixture of these states. But of course, what we actually observe in a measurement process is one or the other, and that is indeed a simple statistical mixture. And we have more or less a bunch of solutions to this, of which the wave function realist approaches kind of factorize out into a kind of Everettian approach. That's right, there's no extra to the world. So you kind of have to believe that in fact both of these outcomes do in some sense occur, and that takes you into a sort of an Everettian type framework. Linear evolution is right, there's extra structure, these are hidden variables which determine which outcome has occurred. Linear evolution is not right, the state of the world is actually one or the other, the wave function collapses, this takes you into the objective reduction program. And then of course, as I say, the psi-epistemic approach, wave function does not represent any state of part of the world at all. So again, the change from here to here isn't necessarily something one has to be worried about. How is this affected by density matrix realism? Well, certainly pure states evolve into pure states, so superpositions don't occur. If you put in a little bit of impurity, not only does it not help, but you end up with something like this, which gives you a situation that is empirically indistinguishable from a statistical mixture of the two outcomes occurring, but in some sense you're actually having to believe it's an ontic density matrix in which you haven't got one or the other outcome occurring. So now you've actually got, in the sense, a density matrix superposition which doesn't even have any empirical consequences, which is really messy. So this really hasn't helped you with the measurement problem at all. If anything, it's made it worse. Solutions to the measurement problem then actually are going to follow, more or less, the same kind of solutions for psi-ontic theories. You either believe it's the only evolution, no extra stretch of the world, and then somehow both outcomes occur, and you go down the Everestian path. There is extra stretch of the world, you go down the hidden variables path, or in fact, you've got to actually supplement it a little bit further in order to make it collapse. And of course, the psi-epistemic solution isn't even on the table, because the whole point of this is I want to take those two metrics seriously as ontically real, so I can't appeal to the epistemic approach at all in this case. So you're stuck with having to actually take one of these seriously.
Well, wait a second, that doesn't follow either. You can still have an epistemic level on top of this, where you have some measurements that are just updates and other ones that are it's definitely not the case that you can certainly throw that out as a piece of your theory.
It might be a piece, but it's not going to help you with this, because once you've actually said, I'm going to take this as ontically real, then you're taking this as being ontologically real, and the problem is we're seeing one or the other outcome.
If you don't know which ontically real thing you have, that doesn't mean that...
Well, you do, because you're seeing it. You're seeing the measurement outcome. You see one measurement outcome.
Okay, I don't think a lot of problems, but...
Maybe there is actually more of a program there. Going through those options, if you take the many worlds approach, you would think that the core interpretation of many worlds and the Everettian approach wouldn't appear to change. You've got two branches, one in which you're seeing one outcome, one in which you're seeing the other. But there's a problem with the probability interpretation. So the recent work in the Deutsch-Wallace decision theoretic approach. Here, if you have something where you have these are not initially equal, this will evolve into equal branch weights. And the Deutsch-Wallace type approach, lays a great emphasis on the persistence over time of transtemporal identity. So there's no concept of something, say, swapping from one branch to the other. So this is indeed has to be the future same person here that is going to get evolving. And the whole Deutsch-Wallace decision theory approach is going to say, I want to look for some kind of constant weight over time that can tell me how I should evaluate which future branch of myself I should care about. And the problem is, because of this non-unitary evolution, there isn't a constant over time branch weight. So it doesn't actually seem that the Deutsch-Wallace approach as it stands is going to go through. More work at least has to be done. There's another problem in that maybe actually this then branching is going to undermine some of your original motivation, because the non-unitary evolution guarantees that the overall entropy is going to be increasing, but the branch-specific entropy can go down. So you're sort of left with, there's an objective entropy increase, but apparently it's a subjective entropy decrease. That's scratching your head a little bit, isn't it, guys? It's not obvious that that's a problem. It sort of goes against the original motivation of it, but firstly, the kind of decrease you're getting here is actually very small. It's of the order of kT log 2. It's of the order of the kind of fluctuations that people worry about in Maxwell's demon type experiments. And one could say, if thermal fluctuations do occur, we do actually observe entropy going down in little bits on small scales at the right kind of experimental situation. So, maybe we shouldn't be worried about that. This is actually, that kind of small entropy reduction is something we can live with, as long as we've got an overall entropy increase going on in the large scale. Next option in the non-collapse approaches would be a de Broglie bone. So very quick characterization of the de Broglie bone. Does this polar decomposition of the wave function and has a hidden variable at the position of the particle that is guided by the phase field, the gradient of the phase field. Can this be done for ontic density matrices? Yes. And the relevant approach is just the simplest way of doing it all together is we take the ontic density matrix, we form a probability distribution, we find there is in fact a concerned current associated with that that's kind of interesting because it's not just the gradient of the phase field, it's actually now weighted both by these weights and by the size of the real field, the R squared field. And then you can have certain trajectory solutions for that. And they differ, and they're not just simply the average, they're very much a weighted average, and weighted by this term as well. What you need for this, though, is a locally conserved probability current. And it's not obvious that the non-unitary dynamics has actually been set up in the right way to get that, which in itself should be a concern. What they've actually done in terms of this literature is they looked into a many-body no-signaling constraint. So when going to many-body equations, what they look at is having an entropy increase for each subsystem. And because without factorizing out this way, you might find that there's actually if you're going to just maximum entropy increase for a system overall, you could find changes taking place on one system that are actually being caused by things being done on another system. So there's certainly work on that, but this isn't got really anything to do with the locally conserved probability current. It's to do with subsystem factorization. So actually, one of the parts of this work in progress is developing a spatially localized entropy steepest descent, where actually we'd be looking at for the whole system, but actually you're looking at it being at each position in space, you're going in the maximum entropy increase. But you're going to have the same problem or the same issue as with the many worlds approach. Branch specific entropy can still go down. And then the third approach would be dynamic collapse. Where you have the current leading one is the continuous spontaneous localization model. So here we have a stochastic, this is a different camera, I really realized quite late in the preparation of this, I should have had a different sign here, but you have actually a white noise field here that has the effect that the mass density matter field becomes localized, and you can put this density matrix in the master equation of this form, which is a Lindblad type equation, and this is a linear in the density matrix space. Now, if you substitute an ontological density matrix into this equation here, you do the most simple-minded thing possible, the resulting ontic mass density does not localize. Why? Because this is describing a probability distribution over pure states again. So the matter density field becomes localized for the given pure state, and the density matrix is definitely diagonalized along states which have a localized mass density matter field, but it's a statistical mixture of pure states whose mass density field is all over the different place. So if you actually just treated that as an ontic density matrix, you'd have a mass density field which was all over the place. So suddenly what was a solution to the measurement problem ceases to be a solution to the measurement problem. So in order to get something to work with objective collapse, we maybe have to go a bit further back to basics, and you look at the original GOW localization operator. And it produces the original thing that there's a random chance of spontaneous collapse taking place with the probability, with the probability given by this term, and then localizing on this. Now we've got a localization on ontic density matrices with localized mass density fields. But note there is actually no master equation in this form. Because this does not evolve in that way. It doesn't evolve in any specific way, because this here, this preparation of some density matrix at a given time, can be constructed out of a large number of different ontic density matrices. And those different ontic density matrices are going to evolve differently. So there is no actual evolution for that as such. You can't simply specify that doesn't actually tell you how it's going to evolve in time. You actually have to specify the probability distribution over the object density metric space. So you've got to have a much more complicated object than we're used to dealing with for a master equation. You've now got entropy decreasing objectively, but again, it's of the order of kT log 2 scalar fluctuations. So, conclusion. Modified Schrodinger dynamics to address macroscopic time asymmetry and modified Schrodinger to address macroscopic emitting outcomes not only are different, but may even contradict each other. The effect of on standard solutions to, or at least realist solutions to, psiontic solutions to the measurement problem are all, in some level, affected and need further work. As an attempt to move subjectivity to thermodynamics, it doesn't succeed without also addressing issues of the interpretation of quantum theory. And that needs further development on the proposed non-unitary dynamics. Also, perhaps questions of interpretation could be radically affected by empirical observations of rho-ontic-based non-unitary dynamics. So it's, and finally, of course, it ultimately, let's remember, it is experiment that has to be the decider on this kind of question. Okay.
We have extra questions, otherwise we do have time.
So, Ed James has this nice quote problem with quantum theories that the founding fathers made an omelette of epistemic and ontic concepts, and they haven't yet unscrambled the omelette. This seems very omelette-y to me. So I was concerned after slide 3, you didn't give any more discussion of what seemed to me a really big issue, which is whether this view is even logically consistent. So I have a whole bunch of challenges in mind, but let me start with the simplest one. Imagine two parties have different information about the system. So it seems to me that sometimes the density operator has to be epistemic. So if I don't know whether something's epistemic or zetspin-down, but somebody else does, then I assign a density operator, but clearly that should be interpreted as ontic. Do you agree?
Absolutely. There's definitely going to be situations in which the correct description is that. That is sometimes the correct description, no question.
Okay, so now, second question. Suppose we have an entangled state. Mm-hmm. I have one half reduced density operator. I want to describe the evolution over time. But if you go and do a measurement on it, then presumably, you know, you update your knowledge about my system. So you assign a different density operator. So the real ontic density operator is the one that you assign, presumably, because you've done this measurement, you've got more information than me. Correct?
No.
Why not?
I think because there's maybe two things, different things going on here. So the ontic state is going to be, in this case, I think the way you're setting up, is going to be the pure entangled state. Then we've each got epistemic states that are going to be expressed as epistemic density operators.
About the bipartite system or about the single system? In general, said that the reduced density operator, let's say we have A and B, would you not say that the reduced density operator on A is its physical state?
Certainly, yes, the reduced density operator is the physical state of, in a sense, the subsystem, but the overall state is not simply, say, the product of the reduced density operators.
Right. And then you do a measurement on B and you update A, your description of A. So you've just learned, say it's a singlet, and you've just learned that B is Z-spin up. So you know that A is Z-spin down. So shouldn't you say that the physical state of A is now Z-spin down?
You're talking here about a pure state. And what we're doing in terms of interactions with a pure state. And essentially, because of this, everything that you're going to say about that is going to be exactly what you currently say about it. So that's not going to be affected by this, because you're just dealing with pure states. And the evolution of pure states is not changed.
Let's talk about that.
Okay.
So, oh, and I guess my question, I have so many questions. Maybe I can do a simple one. Is the source of the empirical distinction the fact that you have nonlinear evolution in your density matrix? In your object matrix?
Well, certainly the nonlinear evolution introduces a characteristic difference in the evolution over time.
Right, but my question is, if the evolution were linear, then you would not be able to distinguish it. Is that correct?
I think if the evolution was linear, you'd have this point that if you had a this and this would evolve from, if they were prepared to be the same at this time, that they would evolve.
Right. So my point then is that here's my challenge. I don't really have a definite question that could be answered in a short period of time. So my challenge is come up with something, a laboratory procedure that someone can do, tell an experimentalist to do. For which you cannot have a description that is wholly epistemic. Because if you can do that, then I don't think you've empirically distinguished them. Just let it go with that.
Okay. Well, I think they can.